Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1 hour, when Jay Gruden joins the show for his Monday appointment, we're giving away Caps tickets right here on Grant and Danny. Make sure you're listening at 5 o'clock. We'll take you up to 6:30 on the Fan. Forget the NFC East standings. How about the conference standings? There are two teams with a better record than the Washington Commanders at 3-1 right now. So welcome you back on a Victory Monday. Time for you to plan your future. The exclusive sponsor of the show is the law firm Cundori & Murad. They'll help you get your last will and testament put together, set up a trust for you and your family. I know this sounds like something you do way down the road, but you got to get it done now. It's not fun, but they'll make it very, very easy. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, as soon as I had kids, my dad said, hey, make sure
you got to do this stuff, man.
You do the important paperwork, and these guys will not only help you, but if you're a listener to the show and you mention us, they will do it for a nice discount as well.
Absolutely. They are awesome dudes who get it, right? They understand it's not the most fun thing in the world to have to do, and they make it as pain-free as possible.
We'll cover the Commanders and the NFL and the Blitz. We start on the diamond. The voice of Nationals baseball since day one back in D.C. is Charlie Slows, who, alongside Dave Jagler in the broadcast booth yesterday, put the finishing touches on yet another season of Nationals baseball. Charlie, I guess broad brush here, but how would you describe the 2024 campaign?
It's, you know, it's really interesting because there were a lot of good things. I think the improvement in the starting pitching, the young pitching, two pitchers who weren't there when the season started, in Mitchell Parker was up quickly because of the injury to Josiah Gray, and then DJ Hers when Trevor Williams went down at the end of May. Progression of Jake Irvin was terrific in the first half, maybe leveled off, maybe fatigued late in the year. I think, you know, those are the positives. And then I think really feel good about number one, Mackenzie Gore, with the way he finished the year. I mean, he pitched in his last, particularly his last three or four, but really his last seven starts the way you hoped he would come out of the gate this year. And if that's what he's going to be, now you saw number one ace type stuff. So I'm really feeling good about the starting pitching going forward for next year. You know, position player wise, we kind of knew they were going to struggle to score runs. You know, they hoped they would get more offense and a little more long ball than they did. Then you're transitioning to the young players in Wood and Cruz coming up in the, you know, the second half of the year. And more to come. And, you know, Mike Rizzo's talked about now what they need to add. And obviously, he realizes they need a run-producing bat somewhere where it's a first baseman, a designated hitter, a full-time DH, or a guy who can play, can do both. Those are the big needs to take that next step forward. The young players progress, the young pitchers progress, and the bullpen is good again. You've got a chance to really move forward.
Charlie, what's your biggest unanswered question going forward? You kind of referenced it there. I'll give you mine, for example. You can copy it or pick one on your own. Where's Kate Cavalli? And I feel like we didn't hear anything. Why didn't we hear anything? He was supposed to come back at some point, and that never happened. That's my biggest unanswered question. What's yours?
Well, yeah, he, you know, I think he you know, he was ill in the middle of the year and suffered a dead arm stage, and not everybody comes back at the same pace. You know, I think they really thought he was going to, you know, initially he was going to pitch in the second half of the year. And so, you know, he didn't. They hope he's 100% healthy, that he physically feels like he's ready to let it go next year with no restrictions and no qualms about it. But now that he hasn't pitched all year and he missed all of the previous year, I mean, Davey made that statement yesterday. They're going to have to be careful with innings and how much he is able to move forward, how much you can count on him for next year.
Charlie, last we saw of C.J. Abrams at Wrigley Field, he's playing, he went 0-for. We find out he gets sent down. The team never confirmed why, but we know it's because he was out all night and then went straight to the game, and they didn't like that very much. When he shows back up, it's obviously going to be a big story at spring training, but do you think that there's any kind of lingering effects, or is it just kind of clean slate, fresh start, big year for him come spring training?
Well, that's what you're hoping for. I mean, obviously, they were sending him a message about how they would like their players to conduct themselves, and that, you know, in this day and age, you know, where you are is always visible to anyone who has a camera and a mobile device that can be put on the internet almost instantly. And so, I mean, you have to be real careful about, you know, perception and that kind of thing. So hopefully it isn't a lingering thing, and, you know, he's ready to go from day one and, you know, message delivered, and, you know, he can come out of the gate next year like he did this year, where he showed so much improvement initially defensively and offensively, because he's an electric player when he's on his game.
Charlie, thank you as always. Hopefully get some well-deserved R&R, buddy.
I'm starting right now.
Love it. Thank you, my friend. Be well.
All right. Bye, guys.
Hit that NFL sounder, please, Darius. Our pal Nate Davis is going to talk about the NFL with us right now. Nate, let's start with last night. Baltimore, a resounding win over Buffalo. What did that mean for both teams?
Yeah, Danny, I think it meant more for the Ravens. I think it just kind of shows that they're really finding a way to incorporate Derrick Henry in there, and that offense is really just a Swiss Army knife that can attack you in several different ways. And I think I think the rest of the league was kind of put on notice last night, and that this team may really be ready to take off.
The Chiefs are 4-0, but they're an unimpressive 4-0 if there's such a thing, and they lost Rashee Rice yesterday. Now, all they do is win, and we know they can flip a switch come the playoffs, but Mahomes has not been himself. Kelce has not been himself. How do you feel about Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're number one until they're knocked off, Grant. But, I mean, like you're saying, it's a very precarious perch. You know, the average margin of victory, I think, is 5 points. You know, they have beaten some good teams in there, but they've also, you know, not looked like necessarily a team that's on the verge of a three-peat either. You know, we'll see if they end up replacing Rashee Rice or if they think they can take care of that internally. I think the thing we lose sight of is that this really kind of has been a defensive-driven team for the last, you know, season plus. So, certainly count the Chiefs out at your peril. But, you know, I think it's pretty easy to look at some of these other teams like the Ravens and think that, you know, maybe they have a better shot at winning this whole thing.
I know it ended up being only a 2-point win, Matt, but, you know, for those of us that were Matt, I'm sure, I don't know who Matt is, Nate, who were watching most of it. I'm going to ask about Minnesota, and I put the M in front of it. I don't know who, but I don't know how I got to Matt. Anyway, Nate, I'm terribly sorry about that. You are Nate. Only ended up being a 2-point W, but Minnesota was dominant for most of that game before Green Bay's kind of furious comeback. Minnesota, to me, has been the most impressive, kind of given where my expectations were for them before the season. Your thoughts on them? You can answer as you or Matt.
Yeah, it was kind of like a replay of the Alabama-Georgia game with that 28-0 lead.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, give them their credit, right? I mean, they're 4-0. I mean, they're those are legit wins. You know, the 49ers and the Packers among that group blew out the Giants. So I mean the Vikings are, you know, they're not frauds. I mean, it doesn't, you know, I'm not ready to fully buy in and say that they're Super Bowl contenders, but I think this is a tribute to Kevin O'Connell, his coaching staff, Brian Flores on the defensive side, and you know, we've seen that they've kind of unlocked Sam Darnold here, which is probably going to lead to an interesting debate after the season. But yeah, I mean, I saw this team and I thought they were kind of a last place team by default, because I thought the rest of the clubs in that very good division were better. But I'm really curious to see how far they can sustain this. I mean, they're tough on both sides of the ball, and you know, they're showing they can hang in there if Sam Darnold can keep this up.
Second time in as many weeks, Nate, we've got two Monday Night Football games: the Titans and the Dolphins in the AFC tonight at 7:30, and then about 45 minutes after that, the Seahawks trying to get to 4-0 if they could surprise the Lions in Detroit. Your thoughts on tonight's slate?
Well, I'll be watching one of those. You know, I guess I'll have the other one on the second TV on mute and kind of monitor it. But I'm really looking forward to that Detroit game. I mean, when these teams get together, it's usually a show. I think their last three meetings between the Seahawks and the Lions, the average score has been 45-35. So should be fun. I mean, I'm curious to see. You know, kind of, I think this is the first real Division I game for the Seahawks. So I'm curious to kind of see how they hold up on the road. Against, you know, a team that we all think is probably, you know, Super Bowl contender, at least on the NFC side. So looking forward to that. As for the other one, you know, just, you know, I don't know how what's take away the Titans or the Dolphins when both those teams having so many problems right now. But, you know, they also provided a really entertaining game on Monday Night Football last year with that Tennessee comeback. So, you know, the NFL, you could always see something that you don't expect, but definitely looking forward to the one in Detroit much more tonight.
Nate, when I ask you about Bears, they're 2-2, which kind of belies what's been going on. They shouldn't have won in week one. They got bailed out by some bad Will Levising. But Caleb Williams hasn't really looked great just yet. I think it's way too early to start asking questions. My question is, when is it okay? When is it on time for us to say, hey, wait a minute, how sure are we?
Yeah, you know, I've had that debate with some colleagues. I mean, I don't think that there's any reason to be majorly concerned. I mean, 2-2 is kind of where I thought the Bears would be at this point. And I also thought that maybe they started turning a bit of a corner yesterday. I mean, I thought yesterday was kind of the thing to follow. You know, Caleb Williams was a lot more efficient yesterday than he had in the other games. He is increasing his volume and getting more experience in the passing game. But they also got DeAndre Swift going. I mean, he had like 165 yards total yesterday, which was more than he had the entire season combined at that point. So I think they're kind of locked in certain aspects of their roster, which we all thought was a pretty good one going into the year. And I think this is another team that's really going to have to like lean on his defense to really be the driving force of this game, and then get a complimentary offense with Caleb and let him kind of grow into the job. But I still think they're capable of getting 8 or 9 wins and maybe that wild card spot at the end of the year.
I'm going to throw Nate on hold. Thank him for us, Ryan. His phone's breaking up. Nate Davis, USA Today. Let's talk Commanders. Nick Akridge, PFF, helps us to do that. Nick, it wasn't the Bengals game, obviously. I don't know that we'll see another one of those for a while by anybody, but another ultra-efficient performance for Jaden Daniels yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he is just he's not looking like a rookie 4 games into his career, that's for sure. And, you know, he's just answering any question people had, you know, pre-draft and questions I had, you know, kind of doing my scouting process, and he's answering them in 4 weeks. It's pretty incredible.
Why? There's so many ways I could ask this, Nick, but at the end of the day, I'm wondering, how was I so wrong, or how was so many people so wrong sort of doubting Cliff Kingsbury? Now, this is a third of the way through the season, not even, and teams make adjustments, they'll figure stuff out, but through 4 games, guys are open. Whatever they want to do, they're able to do pretty much. How is this happening, and how are defenses seem so off guard?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing here is the run game that they're using in it. And I don't think all of that credit will go to Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, I think that they've done a great job as an offensive staff, you know, kind of using the screens that we've talked so much about with Cliff Kingsbury and that run game to really kind of set stuff up in the pass. And that run game has been so unique. It's just so well kind of drawn up where you're getting, you know, Jaden Daniels out in space, you're getting Brian Robinson in space. And it's just been incredible to watch. But like you said, you know, teams are going to adjust, and it's kind of up to Cliff now to kind of, you know, keep adjusting his own plan so that, you know, defense is unprepared. But right now he's been pretty much flawless.
When you guys at PFF put together the grades for this game, who stands out? Who are some of the highest graded players on the team?
Yeah, the big ones were the two linebackers, Frankie Luvu and Bobby Wagner. Luvu had a 90.3, Bobby Wagner with an 87. And they were just flying everywhere. They played so well together. Frankie Luvu had that forced fumble, but yeah, it's been a long time since linebackers kind of led our defensive grades here for Washington, but they really stood out.
Feels like Allen and Payne had their biggest games. You know, maybe something stuff that you guys notice in other games have stood out, but for the Rubes like me, counting stats were there. They were wreaking some havoc in this one.
Yeah, from a pass rushing standpoint, they were much better. You know, Jonathan Allen looked like he was getting a little bit, you know, back to what we've seen from him in the past. But in the run game, they were still kind of struggling a bit, just kind of not really holding up their gaps, losing too much ground. So it's been a little bit rough from them in terms of, you know, the running game. But it was nice to kind of see that pass rush really, you know, start to impact the quarterback.
Last thing, they got the Browns on tap next. Thoughts?
I mean, the Browns don't look great. Deshaun Watson has been, you know, somewhat unlucky. He's graded really well with us. There was a pick yesterday that was right in Amari Cooper's hands, and he dropped it that turned into an interception. But their offensive line has kind of struggled. I think it's going to be, you know, early in the season before we kind of, you know, got to the last 2 weeks and the last two wins, it was going to be one that I thought they would kind of struggle with. But you know, you kind of think that they might be favorites in that game and can look to go to 4-1. So I'm pretty excited to see what they do again on offense. But yeah, I think they should be favored in that game.
Nick, thank you as always, brother. Have a great week.
Yep, you guys have a good one.
That's Nick Akridge of PFF on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. What impressed you most about this team over the last week? And let's take inventory on the feel for Jaden Daniels, who has been absolutely lights out, looks nothing like a youngster. You're listening to G&D.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. It's a victory Hall & Oates Monday on G&D. Second time in 1 week on this show, we've been celebrating the Commanders putting on an offensive display for the country to enjoy, but more importantly, getting a pretty huge win. 3-1 now for Washington. That Tampa Bay game feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
That's how the season began, going to Tampa, getting eviscerated. I remember you and I feeling like they were a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they are. Maybe we'll find out that this isn't reality either. But I like this team's chances to be in the thick of things all year long. Here's the big picture point I would make today. If you're hesitant to come around on the Commanders, you don't want to sip the Kool-Aid, fine, whatever. In fact, I'm waiting till after the Browns game to really jump all the way into the deep end. They beat Cleveland back at home. Not that the Browns are particularly good, but it's a letdown type spot. Winners of three in a row, coming home, reading your press clippings, family and friends seeing you first time since you got on the bird to go to Cincinnati. I could see them losing that game. That's certainly the way things have gone over the years around here. Right when everything starts trending in the right direction, one thing goes wrong,
rug pull,
quicksand
yeah.
begins, and they lose to Cleveland. They're really 3-2. But if they're 4-1, you start talking about percentages of making the playoffs being pretty astronomical. It becomes pretty hard when you're 4-1 with their schedule not to be in the 8-9 win mix. You get to 10, you almost certainly get in. And you can start finding some wins. They've got games, the Giants again, the Panthers, the Bears don't look all that good. The East Division games against Dallas and Philadelphia, Danny, even those games, four of them, look a lot more winnable. Because that's the point I guess I wanted to make big picture is nobody in this division's any good. Washington's the only team that has looked good this season. The Eagles got destroyed by the Bucs. I don't know why everyone keeps telling me how good Philadelphia is. They're not. They haven't been since October of last year. This is who they are. The Cowboys are 2-2. They deserve to be 2-2. They're not that good. They got one weapon on offense. One. This division is there for you.
It's winnable. It is winnable. And the longer you're in it, the more of a possibility that becomes. You're talking about math. I mean, you and I, years ago in 2019, when the Nationals started off so terribly, right? And we're going, here's what they've done. They're not eliminated. It's not over. It's not going very well right now, obviously. But the math is not on their side. You have no margin for error. You can't do that bad 2 weeks where, you know, two starting pitchers get the flu, someone's got dead arm, and your best two hitters are in a slump, and you lose 8 of 10. You can't do that anymore and still make the postseason. Well, they didn't have that. They went on this rip-roaring run where they had the second-best winning percentage in baseball and were red-hot going to the postseason. Flip it here. For this Local 53, if you're 4-1 by hook or by crook, doesn't matter how you get there. Let's say you're 4-1. If you're just average, if you're 500 the rest of the way, that's a 10-win season. If you're, dare I say, above average, and God forbid, there's no huge regression, and you just kind of keep plugging away, and you win a game or two more than you lose, you win 11 games for the first time in more than 3 decades. That's the kind of position you put yourself in. Now, collapses are certainly possible. An injury here or there happens. One too many key guys go out. Schemes get figured out. Bad stuff happens all the time. It's the league. But the point is, the math and the path is now something that you've earned. You've created the ability to have meaningful football games. They're already to the point where there's a great chance they play meaningful football in December and maybe even into January. That is 100% on the table now, whereas I didn't know that it would be before now. But they've earned that right, which is really cool.
Yeah, I just think that if they play the way they've played the last 2 weeks, they can beat anybody. If they play the way they played against the Bengals, they're not a team in the NFL they can't beat. The only 4-0 team, other than the Chiefs, is the Vikings. They could beat either Kansas City or Minnesota playing that game. Kansas City is about as unimpressive a 4-0 team as you're going to find. They just have the ability to squeak out wins. It's a superpower. I don't really get it. It's ugly. There's no style points, but they just do it. And then they flip the switch in the playoffs. The Vikings, I think you asked Nate Davis about it. They got out to a 28-0 lead yesterday and looked amazing. From that moment until the end of the game,
they were in quicksand.
Dominated by the Packers for the most part. And by the way, there were a couple of drop picks by Green Bay in that game. It could have gone very, very differently than it did. I wouldn't be scared of Minnesota. Wouldn't be a fun game necessarily. But I guess my point is there's not really great teams. I was talking to someone last night who said the Bucs are the best team in the NFC. Maybe. I mean, I don't know if that's true or that's not. I know that last week the Bucs lost to the Denver Broncos 26-7. So maybe they are the best team in the NFC after beating Philly by 17. My point is nobody's that good.
Mm-hmm.
Washington at 3-1, just sheer resume style. If you take Commanders off of the ballot, if you take their name out of the equation and everyone's resumes were lined up, I think a lot of people would pick them out of the pile and go, this team's punted once since week one. This team has more scoring drives than incompletions. This team has 3 punts all year.
I'll take that team.
They've averaged 40 points each of the last 2 games. And their defense seems to be going in the right direction. Give me them. And you go, all right, you pick the Commanders.
You go, wait, are you sure? Can I turn in?
This quarterback is number one in QB DVOA this season. I'll take this team. It's Washington, right? So I'm not trying to convince anybody that they're going to continue winning every single week or that this is all not going to come crashing down. But I do think that when you can move the ball and score, you have a chance. And for the first time since Jay Gruden, who joins us at 5, they can move the ball and they can score. So they're going to have a chance every week. When you have a quality quarterback, you're going to win. And like with Cousins as an example, they were never an 11-12 win team, but the floor was always you're going to be an 8-9 win-ish type team. If you can squeak out some wins and kick a field goal and make some plays, you get a big takeaway, block a kick, maybe it becomes 10 wins. The floor gets higher, and they are in that bucket right now, it would appear. But I just love the fact that the division is there for you. Take Washington out of the equation. The Eagles have lost to the Falcons in a collapse and the Bucs in a game where they didn't really show up. They were lucky to have beat New Orleans, and they barely beat Green Bay on a slip and slide. You start that game over, it's 50-50 toss-up. They're going into a bye week. Cowboys, anybody like what they saw from Dallas on Monday Night Football against the Giants? Squeaking out a win against New York after getting embarrassed by the Saints and destroyed for three quarters by the Ravens? It's there for you, man. This is fun. 800-636-1067. All right, let's talk Jaden Daniels. What'd you think?
We don't have enough time for all the different things that I like or that I'm excited about. To me, here's one. And this goes directly to one of the questions, criticisms, whatever you want to call it, that people had. Everyone was panicked about the number of sacks that he took. And for those of us that are devotees, kept yelling, not all sacks are created equal. The reason we care about a sack is not just to hear ourselves talk, but it means it's usually a drive killer. Warren Sharp has some great stats. If you're curious about what happens typically on a drive where there is a sack, pretty much, almost to a percentage point, points don't get scored on that drive. It is a drive killer. That's because it's an 8, 9, 10-yard loss. Oftentimes, it leads to fumbles or turnovers, that kind of pressure. For those of us that kept screaming this, Daniels isn't taking 10-yard losses very often, right? It's not the 12-yard loss. It's a 2-yard loss. Now, it's not good, but it's not a drive killer. Even to that point, he's been sacked fewer times than Kyler Murray, than Sam Darnold, than C.J. Stroud, than Jalen Hurts, than Matt Stafford, half the sacks of Caleb Williams. Some of these things are credit to the offensive line, credit to Cliff Kingsbury and the design, but also Jaden Daniels deserves a ton of credit here.
Yesterday, especially.
Yeah.
10 pressures, 0 sacks.
It's not 0.0. It's not Mark Rippon behind the 91 Redskins offensive line, but for a rookie quarterback going through this, having to, you know, make some plays here or there, the get out of trouble gene he's got in spades, that's been really impressive to me.
Yeah, it's been a really big part of his fast start for sure. As someone who was worried about how often he took sacks in college, I would say, number one, he has been better in that area than I thought, so full a compliment to him. This is a Cliff Kingsbury stat right now, though. The ball is out of his hand very, very fast. And it's one thing to just avoid sacks that way. It's another to be effective. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can guarantee a low sack count by wide receiver screening people to death and throwing the ball short at the line of scrimmage and you can't hit me if I don't have the football. You can't do it. You're not getting a sack if I'm not holding the rock. But to be able to do that and to have success moving the ball like they have has been really, really incredible. The stat I would give you on that is the expected completion percentage for Washington, which is to say normally around the line of scrimmage throws, defenders aren't in the area, it's just ball to the quarterback throws to the receiver quickly, is the highest in the NFL. So 73% of throws out of Jaden Daniels' hand are expected to be completion. The only guy that is within one percentage point of that is Malik Willis, as an example, who Matt LaFleur designed like this high school offense
right.
for and was like, hey, Malik, don't throw the ball. We're going to hand it off. You're going to run it. Or occasionally I'm going to have you throw a screen. So my point is, like, they're not having him hold the football at all. Brilliant. But here's where Daniels gets his credit. When they've gone drop back, when they've asked him to, when they've taken their shots, to your point, he has been very, very good at escaping, and certainly in the last couple of weeks, no doubt about it. First half, the Giants game was kind of my fear, if I'm being frank, where I think he got sacked 5 times in that one half. Maybe it was 4 times and 5 in the game. But he held the ball, if you remember. He was getting sacked a bunch. Mm-hmm. Now, to your point, a few of them were -3, -4, whatever. But the negative play is still the problem. It's like a loss of down. Even if it's a sack for 0, a loss of a down is a big deal. Now you're behind the chain, so to speak. That half is really the only half we've seen like that. And I thought that would be more the norm and not the rarity. So that's where right now I give Jaden Daniels all the credit. What he did against pressure yesterday was sensational. Absolutely brilliant. 10 pressures, Danny, 0 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about P2S. Like, that's a really, really big deal. So, yeah, that's been one of a few areas where I think he has far exceeded a lot of our expectations. What do you think of Jaden Daniels? That's the question here. I got some thoughts. Danny's got more, I'm sure, to offer up as well. And we're going to hit the phones on this. 800-636-1067. We do have Jay Gruden coming up at 5 o'clock. Also, at the very top of the hour in 20 minutes, when Jay joins us, we will be giving away those Caps tickets on the Fan.
Yeah, I had told him earlier I was really proud of him. I knew there were some extra probably stories and things, you know, here back at ASU and going to that. And much like Cliff, no one, you would never have known that, that there was a history here. He and I were in the bubble, you know, at ASU talking about, you know, I had, you know, coached on a team that had practiced here for Super Bowl and, you know, his time here. And I just thought he handled it like a real G, you know, like just stayed steady all the way through in terms of the preparation. He and the quarterbacks and the guys were many late nights, you know, in the room watching tape together. And theirs was, you know, just one office down from mine in the hotel. And all the way through the week, including, you know, into last night, you know, just putting in the extra time going into it. They just kind of stayed around and were talking through all the stuff to go. So I think that speaks to their preparation.
Dan Quinn from Phoenix, Arizona, after the win yesterday. I mentioned this before you got here in our first hour, Danny, but I don't think it can be talked about enough how good of a decision it was to fly straight to Arizona from Cincinnati.
Certainly worked out, yeah. And for ownership
to foot the bill and to pay. Because I just think it got you right back to work. It got you locked in. And Dan Quinn talks so much about brotherhood. It's one of his favorite terms. In fact, Luke McCaffrey was on the show last hour, and he came on and he said that this team's a brotherhood and they look out for each other in the good and the bad. He said, we ride or die in the good times and the bad times. We've built a brotherhood on this team. Straight out of the Dan Quinn playbook. But don't you think that was a great decision to just go straight out there and just put your nose to the grindstone?
Sounds good to me. I mean, I can hear arguments for anything. You know, it's always one of those, if they'd lost 42-14, then it would have been a footnote. Nobody would have cared. It certainly sounded like it worked, right? It seemed like it was practical and thoughtful. The part that I care about is football people turn to business people and go, this is what we need. Business people say, okay, no questions asked. That's what I love. Because what's the whole point of this? It's not to sell another t-shirt. It's not to sell some gimmick to people. It's not for some stupid slogan or a hashtag. It's to win as many football games as possible. And everything that everybody does every single day is supposed to be geared towards that. And so the ownership group goes, okay, no problem. That to me is the story, less so than, you know, this coach using this slogan thinks this is the best thing. Or nobody has any idea. If it was 100% unequivocal, this is what you do. I don't know if everyone would do it, but you might see, you know, studies written about it. But to me, the football people said, this is what we want. Business people said yes, and that's what's exciting.
What's impressed you most about Daniels so far? 800-636-1067. We'll ask Jay Gruden at the top of the hour here on Grant and Danny. I think his decisiveness, ball comes out fast. That's partially designed, but you got to do it too. I mean, yeah. How many times have you seen the Bears with Caleb Williams or some other young quarterback where the slant's there, you don't throw it? Like, it's bang, bang. He makes those decisions. And I think a lot of the things that we want him to work on, I say we collectively as a fan base or the media talks about or whatever, like week to week, it just seems like he makes the adjustment. He hasn't slid. Last 2 weeks, he's got one baseball
Beautiful slides,
in each game. He's not scrambling to reset to throw. He's scrambling to run. Last couple of weeks, he scrambles, he resets. This past week, he's leaving the pocket running. He just flips the ball to Zach Ertz rather than taking his own hit and running. I mean, little by little, week by week, you're just seeing him kind of add another ingredient to the stew, so to speak. Let's go to Smitty and Laurel on GND. How are you, Smitty?
Grant, Danny, how we doing, fellas?
Great, buddy.
Hey, listen, so since this, I've been watching Daniels with this small sample size that we've had him, you know, the preseason and the couple of games he's played. What I've noticed about him is, you know, doing his interviews, he just says the perfect thing.
Always.
He has the perfect smile, and you can tell he just was brought up right and has the right background, and he was raised right. And this, but let me tell you what else I noticed. This dude is a killer on the field because he gets out there, Danny, and he's smiling and he's having fun. But at the same time that he's out there smiling and fun and having a great time, he will snatch the soul out the heart of your defense and has no problem telling you about it while he's doing it to you. He's the type of dude that if he was on any other team besides mine, I would hate him. He's Kobe. I wouldn't like him. I wouldn't like him at all. But since he's my quarterback, I love the dude.
I love the way that is such a good point. Obviously, I never made the NFL or anything close to that, but I remember going up against guys that were better than me, and I'd be efforting and sweating and red-faced and, you know, dabbing my face off with a towel, and I look over, and they're laughing at me. They're chuckling. It's intimidating, man.
I love his demeanor, yeah. Totally true. But, like, when he gets to the sideline and a guy almost hits him but couldn't, there's that jocularity where mm-hmm. I just assume he's going, like, not this time. Like, I'm waiting for the mic'd up Jaden Daniels game to confirm what I'm assuming. But it feels like there's a lot of, especially guys he knows, veteran, you know, players, linebackers, safeties he's been watching for years. There is a very obvious friendly banter where it's pretty obvious that he's, like, so comfortable in his own skin that he's kind of talking trash in this playful way with his big smile. Robert, Fairfax, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Yeah, so you mentioned Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins could not score, you know, in the red zone the way Jaden Daniels can. I mean, I watch a lot of his games. He can move the ball, no question. But then he got down in the red zone, he kind of ran out of real estate, right? And he had to make a really accurate throw. He couldn't scramble 5 yards like J.D. can. And if you look at all the games he won, right? I mean, Jaden Daniels is, I think he scored a rushing touchdown in every game. I mean, in the modern NFL, teams can move the ball. It's the ones that separate those field goals and touchdowns. I mean, that makes a difference. And I think that's why we found a formula.
Yeah, totally. So a couple of things on that call. The first thing is, it's a really good point about moving the football.
Mm-hmm.
I think because the starting field position on average now is close to the 30. I haven't heard anyone talk about this, but I was cooking this theory up last night. So field position over the league, it used to be close to the 20-yard line where drives would start when the touchback was the 20.
Yep.
Then they turned the touchback to the 25. And on average, not surprisingly, the starting field position was around the 25. I heard the stat for the first time yesterday, Danny, that average starting field position now is around the 29-yard line. So if that's the case, it makes sense because each time we change where the average start on a touchback begins at the 30, you know, some are getting brought out. But if the average is now the 29, you're 5 yards closer to midfield. Here's the other thing no one's talking about. Washington has not benefited from this, for the record. But kickers are now better than they've ever been before. 55-yard kicks are happening at the end
routinely
of every single drive. It used to be you had to get to the 30-yard line to set up a 48-yard field goal. Now, I'm not doing a bit here, you have to get to the 40-yard line because you're seeing 56, 57, 58-yard attempts, not at the end of the half, at the end of the game, just to do it because we know that Brandon Aubrey or whoever my kicker is going to go out and make the field goal. So instead of having to get to the 30, you now have to get basically to the 36, the 37, and at that point, the coach feels really good. So ipso facto, you used to start at the 20, you had to get to the 30. You had to go 50 yards to get into field goal range. Now you're starting at the 30, and you basically have to get to the 35. You've got to go 20 plus 15, 35 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That does not sound that... You're basically,
it's not as daunting.
It's a couple first downs. So you're going to see more drives ending in points, right? The Commanders are shattering records. I think that speaks to the league. You're also seeing more sustained long drives in terms of plays and yards because teams are giving you the underneath
stuff. This is where I was going to go, right? So the over-the-top's not anywhere near as readily available anymore. Teams are content to give up yards. That means more first downs. That means more third and sevens get converted so that nobody ends up on SportsCenter with a negative highlight. So I do think that's a thing.
But here's the caller's point. The only reason I brought up Cousins was I was actually presenting a stat, which was the last time they did what they've done the last 2 weeks in terms of scoring those points and wins was with Cousins and Gruden, who's going to join us at the top of the hour in 5 minutes. But to the caller's point, the difference for Washington is I think everyone's kind of content. You want to run 10 plays and go 70 yards, be our guest. You better not have a holding penalty. You better not give up a sack. And you better not, eventually you're going to turn the ball over. Well, Washington's never holding anybody. They're never getting sacks against them. And they're not turning the ball over. And they're finishing these drives with touchdowns while everyone else is settling for field goals. Is that part sustainable? No. But I think the moving of the football actually is.
You saw it against the Giants where they didn't score touchdowns. They sabotaged themselves, but they didn't punt. They went up and down the field.
Somehow they still won.
Yep.
We'll talk to Jay Gruden next. We got Caps tickets for you as well as soon as we return on Grant and Danny.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.